John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Sexy, huh?
You ready?
Always.
You ready?
Yes.
Bet you we are. Tim Hasselbeck every Wednesday at high noon, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you on this overcast, rainy Wednesday. Let's bring a little sunshine into your lives. Tim, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, guys?
You know, Monday night, we've talked about it a lot on this show. There's just certain teams, right, that just, for whatever reason, it seems like they're always on the bad end of things. And wasn't it, like, so typical Cleveland Browns that game played out where they lost the game in the fashion that they did? And what did you make? I mean, it was an incredible game. It was a fun game to watch on Monday night. If you didn't enjoy that, then, you know, the NFL's not going to get you as a fan, but what did you make overall of the game?
Well, I mean, was it 89 points scored? I mean, I think people like seeing points. People like seeing good players. They certain, you know, both teams are kind of littered with, you know, players and, you know, look, an former MVP, a player that was a number one overall draft pick, you know, at the marquee positions. And so like, I think that's what people like seeing. I think it's one of the reasons why, like, when we analyze teams, whether it's you guys, me, or really anybody else, we seem to all kind of favor offense. You know, I think even, you know, probably subconsciously we do that. And, you know, it's just more fun that way, I think. And so, look, it was a great game. I think it's two good teams. They're not perfect teams, but I think both of them are really good. And I would just say this, in terms of, like, you know, Cleveland losing – you know, in that fashion, kind of the drama associated with it, still a 9-win football team, you know. And I think I said to you guys a couple of weeks ago, I thought they would get to 11 wins or, and look, that's for Cleveland, that's a drastic change for what has been normal for them.
Right. But you understand the dynamic. I mean, there are two huge rivalry games. And it's the Ravens and the Steelers. There's no secret there. And those two franchises have absolutely owned the Browns. And it's important for them to try. And by the way, the Browns will finish their regular season against Pittsburgh. To try to win those games rather than always lose those games. And here you are. You're at home. It's Monday night. The hype train is huge. You're just coming off a big win in Nashville over the Titans. Baker Mayfield threw for 4 touchdowns. And, you know, yet again, it seems like they can't find a way to win those type of games.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. But I guess, you know, I'm kind of more, you know, looking at maybe a bigger picture of Cleveland. Like, this was, they fired their coach last year, you know. So, you know, when you get a brand new coach and you have an offseason the way they have had an offseason, and when the player who's, you know, widely viewed as their best offensive player is done for the year, and you know their best defensive player was missing time because of COVID, and was that a game that, you know, you feel like maybe they would have turned the corner if they were able to pull that game out and win that football game? Yeah, sure. There's probably like a bit of that feeling. I just am looking at this team as just a few years ago they were winless. They're a 9-win team. And to your point, like coming off a good win last week, you know, they play another, you know, team that's viewed as a playoff caliber team. And, you know, depending on how things kind of, you know, could have bounced a little bit differently, you know, they could, you know, they're right there. So, yeah, look, I get you. It's disappointing anytime you lose a division game, especially when there's a history and all that stuff. But I think Cleveland's a good team. I think there should just kind of be this optimism surrounding them.
Well, I think if they would have won that game, I think we'd have been sitting here talking with you today about the Browns actually winning that division. They have a show. You know, I mean, Pittsburgh's gone from, you know, 11, you know, undefeated and the only last team standing in the league at undefeated to next thing you know, our conversation today, can the Browns win the division? You know, I think there would have been people believe they could because of all the injuries and everything that's happening with the Steelers right now. They just don't look like the same team. But, you know, you lose that game, and obviously that's not going to be in the cards. But I think today the storyline would have been, if they won that game, can the Browns win the division? You agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think you're right, because the Steelers are going the opposite direction.
Yeah, they're going the wrong way.
The thing with the Steelers is, you know, they keep getting, you know, injuries on the offensive line. They lose one of their good, you know, pass rushers. And they're a team, you know, the drops have been a kind of this issue that, you know, it seems to be snowballing. And, you know, the other thing with them is, like, they don't run the football at all. Like, they're this kind of one-dimensional team. So, yeah, I think they're heading in that direction. The Browns, you know, prior to the game against the Ravens and even elements of that Ravens game, you know, we have them all, you know, going the other direction. They are, you know, they're a tough team with two good backs, and they will run the football, and they've got a good defense and playmakers on that side of the ball. And if the quarterback can play, you know, as well as he has in spurts, all of a sudden you're like, well, wait a second, you know, are they a team that people aren't going to want to see, you know, in the postseason where it's, you know, it's a one game elimination. So yeah, look, I think we're kind of still in that realm a little bit. To me, I look at it and I think, look, hey, the Chiefs are the best team in the AFC. And, you know, I think at one point we maybe were like, well, look, maybe Pittsburgh's there with them. Well, they're not now, right? So, and look, in fairness to Pittsburgh, and, you know, their world kind of got flipped upside down a little bit when the Titans were going through that contact tracing and guys testing positive, and the game gets moved, and their bye week gets moved, and then now they're kind of playing a stretch with no break. They're getting injuries. Like, I think that's part of how this year is going to go. You know, like, how have you survived, the new protocols and guys being, you know, sick? And I think that was kind of a start for them that made things more difficult. Now they're in the heat of it, and if they can't recover by the time the playoffs start, then they're not going to be much of a threat.
How do you explain the drops? I'm sure you've gone through that as a quarterback. Pittsburgh's got really, really good receiving core. Juju Smith drops the first two passes to him. Deontay Johnson, who's had some big weeks, all of a sudden he can't catch anything. Yeah, they bench him during the course of the game. I mean, Mike Tomlin's like, you know, if you can't catch the ball, we'll find somebody who can. They got, I think, the most drops in the league. Like, how do you explain what's going on with a very good receiving core?
Yeah, I think the drops, I mean, look, if they're guys that can catch, right, which those guys can, if they're guys that can catch and then you're dealing with the drops, then I think that, look, it just becomes one of those things that's mental, right? Like, we've joked before about throwing batting practice to little league teams, you know? If you peg a couple kids, it's like it's in your head, and you're like, well, wait a second, can I really throw BP anymore? You know, I think the drops can, you know, be in a similar way. And, look, Eric Ebron is a really good player. He's made some amazing catches over the last few years in his time in Indy and, you know, even with Pittsburgh. But then, so you're like, well, how do you explain the drops? I think it's one of those situations. And I think, you know, you also, like, if you look at the other night, it looked kind of nasty out. It was probably wet and cold, a little slippery. And, you know, and so sometimes that doesn't help, you know, pull you out of it. So, look, I think drops with guys that can catch, with those guys can, ends up really being just a mental deal.
Really? Aha! Sorry, there was a text in between your text, Darren. I missed your cue. I thought you had one more there. Sorry. Tim Hasselbeck is with us. We're talking ESPN. So, Tim, this is the flavor every week now, and it's gotten more intriguing, especially with Derrick Henry getting a huge game on Sunday. And you're looking at Detroit and their struggles, you know, against the run. there's a shot. There's an outside shot. He could do a lot of really special things. 2,000 yards, maybe, if he has a big finish. Back-to-back rushing titles. But he's also getting to a workload that would have you concerned historically of what that does to you down the road, particularly next year. So how do you try to tackle that? I know they're aware of it. For example, you know, they saw an opportunity maybe to give him one or two more carries last week to get over 200 when they didn't have to do it. They had the game won. But how would you try to approach that if you're the Titans?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they've tried to have a balance, too, with some of the other backs that they've played. You know, whether it was Foreman or whether it's McNichols. Like, I do feel like they, you know, it's, you know, sometimes it's second quarter and, you know, the other backs are in the game. So, yeah, I think you want to be mindful about it. You've invested in having him, you know, with the team, you know, for, you know, the future, if you will, you know, especially at the running back position. And so, yeah, I think there probably is some certain statistical milestones that are meaningful to the player, to, you know, kind of the historic, you know, pace that he's been on in terms of, you know, things he's accomplished as a runner. And so, look, not that that's the most important thing, but I think you need to be aware of those things at the same time. Yeah, being concerned about workload. Now, I also think that part of, you know, the other side of it is that, you know, some of these kind of like elite, freakishly athletic, strong runners have the ability to maybe go further than other guys, right? So, like, look, Eddie George's career was longer than other guys, you know, and Adrian Peterson's career in terms of production has been longer than other guys. And now, you know, they can be outliers, but at the same time, I think you look at Derrick Henry and you say, well, I think there's a lot of kind of outlying things that he's been able to do. And, you know, he wasn't called on as much, you know, earlier in his career as he's been on, as he's been called on now.
So looking ahead now, you've got the Washington team. They all of a sudden have got a couple of good wins here, and they look like maybe the best team in that division. I was looking at all kinds of odd sites. You know, what are the odds that a team ends up with a 500 record now in the NFC East, which probably wasn't even thinkable before? But are they now emerging as the best team in that division? How good is their defense?
Yeah, I don't think that division is any good, which is probably not a, you know, anything different than anybody else thinks. Okay, Philadelphia is obviously kind of in a weird spot with a quarterback situation. They've dug themselves a huge hole. I don't think New York has, you know, the firepower to be consistent offensively, even though they have a good defense. And so, you know, you look at them and they're a 6-7 football team who I think when they have Alex Smith as their quarterback, you know, can find ways to, you know, not lose it at that position. Yeah, I think they are good defensively. They're well coached. Ron Rivera is a very good defensive coach, and I think that that kind of shows in how that team is prepared. And so, you know, I don't know. I don't know that anybody is scared of those teams. I look at the NFC, and I think, you know, the East is a mess, and, you know, I'm not really sure who the best team in that division is or in that conference is. I just, you know, you can maybe say, oh, let's wait for Breeze to come back. But I think that the NFC is just basically so wide open. With that being said, I still don't think that a team out of the East ends up being a real big threat.
So with that in mind, one team we've looked at a lot is the Rams. Do you think the Rams have the best roster other than the quarterback position in the NFC?
I do. I mean, I got asked on SportsCenter on Sunday, you know, who kind of, okay, right now, who's your best team? And I think I would say the Rams, probably because of that. They have a good roster. You know, we just take their defense. They've got good playmakers at every level of their defense, okay? So, boom, you start there. They've, you know, they have pretty good special teams. They've, you know, they're kind of, I think, finding a runner in Cam Akers. They're, you know, scheme-wise, I think it fits the quarterback great. And so I think there's elements where you're like, yeah, it's the Rams right now. You know, I kind of alluded to it. Well, what about when Breeze gets back? You know, I think the Saints look like a totally different team when Breeze gets back. Because I think you look at other teams, and just even watching the Vikings and Tampa Bay play this weekend, but the Vikings basically were the better football team. They doubled them up in time of possession. They ran 26 more plays. You know, they just basically gave away 13 points with a mixed extra point, three missed field goals, and then a horrible pass interference call on a Hail Mary before the half. That's a difference in the game. So, yeah, I look at those two teams and I'm like, I don't think that any one of them is really all that good. So I think Green Bay is the other team that's maybe in the mix. And so, yeah, I think it's wide open, probably the Rams, maybe Green Bay, Saints when Breeze gets back. Like, that's how you see it, which feels wide open to me.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us every week. A conversation we were having earlier, Tim, about the Titans, and because Mike Vrabel was asked in his press conference about Arthur Smith and his jobs are opening up and Arthur's name gets mentioned, you know, kind of his thoughts on that. And it kind of went into a deeper conversation about how Mike defends his players, defends his coaches. You can tell that he has their backs. And then it led us down to the defensive coordinator conversation and the fact that they don't have one, that it's Shane Bowen, but not with the title. So you look at the Titans this year with 9 wins, and you know that what the offense is, but as you see that defense and the miscues that they have had, do you think it's more the fact that they don't have a true DC or the fact that it's just the personnel?
Yeah, to be honest, I think you can kind of see this in Vrabel's reaction sometimes. The thing that's been stunning to me is these third and long situations. Like, they've been exhausting to watch. And I think when you see Vrabel on the sideline sometimes react to it, it's kind of like, oh my gosh, like, how does that happen? I feel like we've coached it right. We've coached it the way it's probably been coached for years. We liked the call we had for the play that the offense decided to run. And so, you know, to say that it's that's a coordinator issue, like, I don't know. I don't think that would necessarily be the case. I would think this, and I don't know this for a fact, but I would think this. Mike Vrabel was a defensive player, a very good defensive player that had been around multiple schemes, but for the most part, you know, had been a part of, and also, you know, as a player, as a coach, had been a part of and experienced real success with, you know, a certain style and brand of defense. And so I think that whoever is going to work for him on the defensive side of the ball probably has to see it in a similar fashion, which is, you know, let's be honest, like, that's what, you know, we've seen, you know, when he had Dean Pease, or, you know, just kind of how he's approached that in the past. So if he had a defense coordinator, I don't know that they would be doing anything drastically different than they're doing right now. Now, could they add a coordinator, you know, in the future, and would that make sense? Yeah, I think it could. But I haven't seen that as, like, that's the issue. I think the bigger issue is, not necessarily personnel. I think the personnel has improved. A little more pressure on the quarterback. And just some of these third and long situations, like finding a way to get it done, even if you don't have the right call. Like, that, to me, would probably be where, you know, I see the most frustration.
Can I step in for just a second?
And I was going to set you up because I know where you're going with this.
I mean, if that's the case, Tim, then what you laid out is correct, and what's been going on this season, then why didn't that happen with Dean Pease if it's not about the coaching, if it's not about the coordinator? We weren't talking about this stuff with Dean Pease.
Yeah, well, and listen, sometimes you can – you know, sometimes it's a little like, are you kidding? Like, why are we in this? You know, where, like, we did everything we wanted. We got to 3rd and 13. Like, that's exactly what we were trying to do. And, like, but, you know, the question ends up being is, like, well, are your calls all that different than they were with Dean? You know, I don't know that – I don't believe that they have been. So –
well, you just said that the personnel's gotten better, and I agree with you. I said that earlier.
Well, what I'm saying is, when I say that, and I will say this, and I said this to you guys a couple weeks ago, I actually think that the addition of Desmond King has made a big difference for the positive. So when you look at the yearly statistical numbers, they are they're not going to be good because some of those early struggles. Okay. Now, obviously, things haven't totally changed on some of these third downs over the past, you know, call them 5 weeks. But, you know, I do think that, look, I think there's a stretch here where the numbers can even out. It's just not normal. Honestly, like, it's one of these things that I feel like it's kind of an outlier. And that's why I think, like, Vrabel's reaction during a game, you know, when they give up a third and eight, you know, is like, what? You know what I mean? Like, I know this works. It's tried and true. It's been proven over time, over his, you know, decades of time associated with the NFL. So, you know, I think there's an element of, look, you can be unlucky a little bit sometimes. You can have some guys in position, they don't make plays. I think there's a really good chance that this stuff evens itself out. And, you know, that maybe sounds like a cop-out answer, but, look, I think you can look at some people and be like, well, you guys are just playing way too much man coverage. Like, I remember when Bob Sutton was the defensive coordinator at the Chiefs, and it's like, you guys play cover one every time you're in, like, a third and medium. Of course, like, because you're going to get pick plays and rub plays, you know, till you're blue in the face with that stuff. So, that's obvious to me. That's a problem. Or look at the Greg Williams stuff and how aggressive he is. And it's like, look, sometimes you're just too aggressive. You don't need to be that aggressive all the time. Like, make them earn it. And so, look, I don't feel like the Titans are doing something, you know, that's out of line. And I think it can even itself out.
So, Tim, I want to get your opinions on this, because another thing that that we've discussed is your colleague, Louis Riddick, it's being reported he's interviewed for the Texans and the Lions GM jobs. And we've seen this over
Lions
the last
on Friday.
Yeah,
and supposedly on Friday.
We've seen this over the last few years of guys that go in the TV booth, whether it's the broadcast booth or play an analyst role like you've done. We've done both. And then they get back into their profession, whether as a coach or a front office guy. And I know Lewis is a little different. He's never been a GM, but why do you think that is, that we've seen kind of an uptick in this? And I know all the studying and everything that goes into it, but what are your opinions on it?
I think part of the reason is this. When you get outside of working for a team, right? So when you work for a team, your circle is, you know, for the most part, that team and kind of the people that, you know, that's your circle. Well, when you get out of it and get into TV, you know, now all of a sudden are covering everybody. And so, you know, your network, if you will, of people that you're interacting and talking with and maybe hit it off with changes. And, you know, so just take for Lewis, he's been doing Monday Night Football. Well, so he's been doing Monday Night Football. He goes, you know, and he's going to meet with people, you know, at all these different organizations. And they're going to get to know him. They're going to talk, and they might hit it off, and they might like him and think, well, you know what, that might end up being a good fit. I mean, think about John Lynch. You know, John Lynch in TV, he's calling games, yeah. Probably had a number of games that Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator for, so meets with him prior to the game, and boom, and next thing you know, like there's a relationship there. So I think there's an element of that. I also think there's an element of, you know, when you have the ability to step away a little bit and then see how other people are doing things, you can be better off for it. I'll use a college example for you. You know, Mac Brown was in TV, and, you know, he gets back into coaching. Now he's North Carolina's head coach, and I think the way he views kind of how he uses and communicates to the media, I think he does it differently now after having been a part of it. And so I think there are elements of kind of those things that could go together that maybe make somebody a little bit more attractive of a candidate, you know, after time away from the game, but yet, away from a team, but not away from the game.
You mentioned John Lynch. Do you think that he's, and I know, again, it's different that he was a player and then went to the broadcast booth and then a GM, but is he probably the most successful top of mind that could come to top of mind for you that has kind of gone this route?
I mean, I think that, you know, it's clear that he had a pretty good track record being out and going you know, I mean, his new role is something he had never done before. So, and I don't know that there's a look. I feel like you see it more in other sports. And you look at baseball, and it's like, well, that guy was just a player, and all of a sudden he's a manager. And you know, basketball, obviously the same thing. Football seems to be, you know, different. But I think there are elements of, you know, knowing about team chemistry and knowing about if a guy can play or not, and then if you're paired, you know, right GM with the right coach and right coach with the right GM, and then, you know, salary cap, you know, individual in an organization, you know, I think those things can work, you know. And so, okay, you know, Mike Mayock, you know, has, I think, been a part of making that team a more talented football team, you know, in Las Vegas. So I don't know if he's the most successful, but, you know, I think in some ways people are people, teams are teams, football is football. And so there is an element. I'll use this example. Trent Dilfer's coach at Lipscomb Academy. We had never been a high school football coach before, but he could do it. He was a good high school football coach. And then if you asked him to go, you know, do something else, be a college football coach or a pro football coach or be the leader of a business, like, I think there are elements of a lot of those things that he would just get right because he's been around it and he's learned from a lot of people.
Well, leave us with this. If you plan on coaching somewhere, is it assumed that I'm coming with you as maybe the get back coach or something?
Well, I think we have a much bigger role than the get back coach. I think, probably like social media, director, off-season activity director, travel. There'd be a lot of travel. There'd be a lot of roles, I think. Yeah, a lot of roles. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Real quick before we get out of here, could you go back on, let us in, peel back the curtain a little bit quickly on Lewis Riddick. What is he like? You're obviously around him. You've been around him.
Mm-hmm.
What is he like as a person? I mean, we only see him on television.
I mean, he's kind of like he is on is in person on TV. I mean, he's really serious. I mean, I feel like he's serious a lot. You know, he's not these guys always cracking jokes or goofing around or any of that stuff. I mean, I think he's pretty intense and serious. I mean, that's pretty much, I think he comes across that way on TV. You know, he's into it and cares about it. And I think that's, you know, that's not made for TV. I think that's pretty much how he is. You know, he was with Washington when I was a player there, and he was that way as a scout. I feel like, you know, when you see him around the building, you'd be like, is he mad at me or is he just serious? You know,
just, it's like, all nah, business.
Uh huh.
Yeah, kind of like this show, just all business. You know, not really. Tim, we always We always enjoy the visits. You have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next week before the holidays.
All right. Sounds good. See you guys.
Thank you, Tim. Tim Hasselbeck, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. We'll come back with our new top 10 for the week. But right now, as I'm sitting here watching Richmond and Vanderbilt, Richmond up 27-10 over Vanderbilt with about 7.5 minutes to go in the first half. Speaking of basketball, it feels like just yesterday that Los Angeles was lifting basketball's most coveted prize. Since then, they've introduced a new class of professional basketball players through the draft and seen a few marquee names switch teams. Luckily for us sports fans, DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is here to kick off the 2021 basketball season. Listen up, with a no-brainer for all customers new and existing. If you haven't tried DraftKings Sportsbook yet, head to the App Store right now because you don't want to miss this. To celebrate the return of basketball, DraftKings Sportsbook is going to give you any team you want of your choice on opening night, plus 75-point spread. Yeah, you're going to get 75 points. That's all you have to do is bet on opening night. And if your team doesn't lose by more than 75 points, you double up your money. This Saturday, there will be an endless amount of action to get in on, so don't wait. Head to the app right now. DraftKings is safe, reliable, and secure, making it easy for you to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. All you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Remember to use that promo code 1025GAME. When you sign up, you'll get a team and 75 points on opening night for a chance to double up your money. That code again, 1025GAME. Do that and double up your money on opening night. That's for a limited time. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Boto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casinos, the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.